the record would show that we are back, and we go on to the next agenda item, which is capital projects update. Katie Ratter.
An empty room is a pretty tough act to follow. So I'll be very brief. Good evening, Council. My name is Katie Ratter. I'm the Public Works Capital Project Manager. And so right now we have one project that's actively undergoing construction, and that's our sanitary sewer pump stations 2 and 3 project. Both of those are on bypass. The electrical and painting are underway on pump station 2. If you drive by the pump station 2, you'll notice that there's a couple of platforms that have been installed there for both the generator and propane tank, and that's to keep those above the 100-year flood in case that pump station does get inundated with water, that we can continue to keep it running. Painting and electrical is starting on pump station 3, and we are undertaking some leak repair on both pump stations before we button those up and get those done. So the schedule is a little bit slower than what we had initially anticipated, so we're in figuring about a mid-December construction completion. So I don't know if anybody has any questions about that.
Council. Councilmember Watson and Councilmember Goodrich.
What's the budget look like for both of them?
We're within budget. We've we added some money in there for force account in the event that we did have leaks in the pump stations. It's impossible to tell without, you know, totally draining the pump stations, which requires putting them on bypass, hosing them out, heating them up, figure that out. So we're looking good there.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Did the one by the railroad tracks, did that have a generator before, or is it we're just adding it?
It did. The generator before, I think, burned more oil than it did diesel for the guys to keep it running. So it was actually
inside the building?
Yeah, both pump station 2 and 3 had a generator inside the building. And now both generators will be outside.
So this would be like the one down at Smith and LaValley?
Just like pump station 4, yes. Mm-hmm.
Very good. Council, any more questions of Katie?
Nope.
Thank you so much.
Oh, I had a couple other things.
Keep going.
Very quick. Washington Street, pretty much done. You'll be, if you drive by there tomorrow, you'll see a couple more signs being installed. But other than that, we're just finishing our closeout paperwork. Same story for the Central City Water Project. That project's done. We're just finishing up the paperwork, which is pretty significant. Mm-hmm. So we hope to be following up with some financial information in January once all of our projects have been closed out. The other thing I wanted to mention is last week the Transportation Improvement Board awarded projects, and the city was a recipient for $100,600 to build a sidewalk on Cherry Street from First Avenue all the way to 3rd, and then north on 3rd to Maple Street, which is the street in between Alder and Cherry. So anyway, we're looking forward to that, and that will be scheduled for construction in 2018. And that's all that I had. I'm sure Kevin's got some stuff about the parks and how the bathroom projects are going. So if anybody has anything else for me, I'll
let's shift to Kevin. Maybe that would be the one.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, Kate.
I think I gave a little bit about an update about the bathrooms at the end of the last council meeting we had with the design for the Star Park bathroom is coming back in, look to have that ready and then have it queued up for a project to go out for the spring when weather gets conducive to digging in that sewer trench. We evaluated the slopes and everything and got away from the pump station, that gravity line for that, and I'll have an engineer's estimate coming up in the future to provide.
Very good. I think that's it. Oh, Councilmember Goodrich.
Are we other restrooms? Are we going to have those in time for old-fashioned Christmas?
Yes, yeah, actually. Trying to fight with me. I talked with Jim Slaughter, our
public works
foreman, public works foreman. I couldn't get superintendent out of my mind. But anyway, Jim, our public works foreman, everything is installed down at the bathrooms except for the mirrors. They're going to be putting the mirrors in. They have the floors painted. They have the walls painted. The lighting's been installed. The sinks have been installed. And it's supposedly looking pretty good. I have not gone in myself to look at it, but last time I went through, they had the lighting up, but they hadn't painted yet, and they hadn't done the sink. So there's been a significant amount of progress since the last time I went in. Believe that they have the mirror in-house, or it was being delivered shortly to be able to get that installed. So, yes, I do believe it'll be available for the old-fashioned Christmas.
Very good. More questions of staff on projects? Very good. Moving on to item F, I'm going to set this one up a little while you're setting up. A couple of experiences recently. One was my wife and I every year go to the annual greenhouse Christmas, pre-Thanksgiving party, which is a bunch of free food we get to eat. But there was a vendor there giving out samples of high-end chocolate. And it was, you know, when there's chocolate, I'm there. And this guy started talking about that he and his wife lived in Bellingham, but their manufacturing's in Lower British Columbia. But they were thinking about they'd like to move to Ferndale to manufacture. And if I knew anything about Ferndale, I said, nothing at all. Anyway, so I think they might show some promise as another manufacturing business in Ferndale. Then last week at the Chamber, the November Chamber of Commerce lunch, one of the new members was Jack's Paleo Baked Goods. So somebody in Ferndale is baking items that are all paleo, whatever that means. So we make things in Ferndale, and it seems to be attracting people with that sort of business mindset. With that in mind, staff and some council members have come up with a new idea.
Right.
Mr. Burnett.
So Yori Burnett, Community Development Director. Riley Sweeney, our Communications Officer, is also going to be presenting as well. So pretty quick presentation. What we're looking for from you is head nods and questions more than anything else. This is not something that is it's not a budget item. I don't know that what we're talking about would cost money, at least in the 2017 budget. In the future, we might be looking at possibly reaching out through conferences and some printed material. But by and large, this is something that we would do in-house and or work with businesses. So over the last 30 years or so, we keep on hearing these different things that no one knows that Ferndale exists, that we don't support existing businesses, that it's all about Bellingham. I just flew back into Bellingham today, and when you go into the Bellingham International Airport and you see the Choose Whatcom, it's really Choose Bellingham. You know, really. I mean, every single picture, even the website, is Bellingham-centric. And so Ferndale it kind of disappears. And that hurts us for business recruitment, for identity, for our existing businesses. And it also doesn't tell the full story of what Ferndale is and really what Ferndale could be. And you know, we did the comprehensive plan this year, and we do the comprehensive plan, and we put it on the shelf, and I know that as a planner that's what we do, and we go through these exercises because we need to. But really what a comprehensive plan is or should be, and what we're talking about here, is telling the story of what our city can be and what it is. And that's so much more than something that you see on paper. And it's really when you do go and you travel, you visit other cities that get it or do it right, you see that, and it's tangible, and there's a sense of pride. And it can really move a community forward. And we started thinking, okay, well, that's something, why can't we do that here? So what we're going to go through pretty quickly is kind of what we know right now, what our plan is, and then the rollout of the plan. So what we know is that during the recession, I think we all kind of heard all the rumors about Walmart or Costco, and we chased after them. And we did that partly because we were in the middle of the largest recession that any of us had ever seen. And that was a safety, you know, where this is a business that is still potentially growing. And not to say that retail is bad or large retail is bad, and we all have our own opinions. It is, whether we were right to go after large retail over the last 10 years, who knows? But we know that large retail is in a state of flux. We know that there are only a certain number of large retailers around, and that they're trying to figure out what their business model is nowadays. especially up here in the Pacific Northwest, where the Canadian market, which had really driven it, has changed dramatically. We also know that compared to a lot of other businesses, when we're trying to figure out, okay, what kind of lure do these guys bite on, what large retail bites on is the market. That's what they're after. You know, that they're looking at rooftops, and they will come when there are rooftops and when there's traffic, or they won't unless you provide a whole bunch of subsidies to allow business to come in, or a whole bunch of subsidies to try to get an existing businesses to continue and possibly relocate to another location, which is what Bellingham did to keep Costco. Ultimately, what we're kind of figuring out is that large retail is going to come here at some point, but it's going to come when the market's here. And you know, we can look at large retail, is that 150,000 square feet? Is it 200,000 square feet? Is it just seeing, like, you know, a Chili's restaurant, or a, you know, even a mobile home or a mobile phone shop? They're going to come when their individual market is here. I mean, sales tax would be fantastic. You know, it's money. It would be great, and it would help your budget discussion. It would help us move us forward. Increased shopping options would be great, too. It's not that retail is bad. And again, it is part of Ferndale's future, but it's not the only way. And the more that we try to say, okay, retail is the only way that Ferndale is going to grow up, the more that we kind of potentially, if we're just myopic on what we're looking at, the more we turn our back on what really has made Ferndale what Ferndale is. And we heard a little bit about that earlier today. So what is Ferndale? Well, Ferndale makes things. I mean, that's something that we've, you know, kind of heard or seen over and over, and we've been talking about it. And you can go through the list of all the different things that we make. The chocolates was one potential example. You know, but we see every single day people coming in. It's not the retail, but it's, oh, they make the, you know, paleo cookies. Who knew about that? Or they make vitamins out of colostrum, which is cow's milk, newborn, you know, soon after birth cow's milk. LaBelle is building right now off of Scout Place. They're going to employ a whole bunch of people. They're moving their whole operations here, but they don't get the headlines, you know, in the newspaper or amongst council. But this is kind of what Ferndale is. We are the community for Cherry Point. We are the town for the Lummi Nation. We are the only ones for those businesses and those industries, and that is really what sets us apart. Bellingham, you know, they've got Western. They've got retail. They're the cultural center. We're not going to be able to compete with them directly on those. We're not going to all of a sudden get University of Phoenix or something like that that puts an outpost here. You know, as much as we all talk about how we'd love to see the Leader Block building go, or as much as we do talk about all the great things that we have down at Pioneer Park, Bellingham's larger. They have more cultural stuff. We might be able to do all our cultural stuff, you know, better or more authentically in some cases, but we're not in competition, you know, with them on that. Linden has their heritage, and they're the agricultural community, that they and the other small cities. And then Blaine, of course, is a border town, and it has the harbor there. We don't have those. But again, we make things, and by it sets us apart, and it allows us to really tell some stories about what does it mean to be Ferndale made. So, you know, we can tell the story of these businesses, because each of these businesses does have a different story, how they came to be. And here's just, you know, some of them. And we go from Lummi Ventures, which, you know, and the Lummi Commercial Company, which is, you know, an amazing story when you hear about it, where they build the Lummi Nation, the physical elements of what the Lummi Nation is. Again, LaBelle, Samson Rope, Twin Sisters, BP. You know, everyone's heard of BP. How many of you guys knew that their president of American operations grew up in Whatcom County? I didn't know that, but that's an interesting story to tell more about what is Ferndale made. And we can tell their story, and they can tell our story as well. You know, where it's not just one-sided, it is really community, where we're proud of each other. And it's not just business. Ferndale Community Coalition was talking about some things that they are doing in Ferndale that's really set Ferndale apart, where they were saying that Ferndale gets it, Ferndale says yes, and that's another cool story that we can tell. We can tell about Ferndale personalities, and we can tell about school events and successes. Again, the Lumination donated the sign at the high school to tell those successes of the community. I mean, that's part of what kind of brings us all together. So what we're wanting to do is establish a branding tagline and a logo. The concept would be, and Riley's going to talk a little bit more about it, but that we would have our branding on the products that are made in Ferndale by these local businesses, so people would be able to see a Ferndale-made logo wherever they go whenever they buy these products. We would have links to a supporting website, which is ferndalemade.com, and of course we would connect with Choose Wadcom. So just as an example, one scenario, the football. So you're down in Seattle, you're at a hotel, and you get up in the morning and you're going to go for a run. So you put on your shoes and, you have to put in new insoles. Well, it's Superfeet, and it has Made in Ferndale or Ferndale Made logo in them. Okay, cool. You catch a shuttle to the game. It happens to be the Bel Air shuttle, Ferndale Made, another Ferndale. You eat a hot dog at the game. The official hot dog, I believe, at Seahawks game is Hempler's Hot Dogs, Ferndale Made. You happen to be watching a replay, and you see the rope with the little camera that goes over the field. Samson Rope, Made in Ferndale, Ferndale Made. The more that you can see the Ferndale Made logo, the more it creeps in your head. I mean, that's what we've talked to folks about. It's not just using our Facebook, because people don't know that Ferndale really exists. It's getting this in their head, Ferndale Made, Ferndale Made, and maybe they happen to own a business and they go to ferndalemade.com and they say, gosh, you know, Ferndale, they got the quality of life of Bellingham. They're, you know, got more people within 100 miles of any city north of San Francisco, all these different things. I'm going to locate my business. Will this happen for everyone? No. Most people are just going to go to the game, have fun, not even think about it. But it will happen for some people, this connection. So our ability to get our branding in front of people is key. And again, it's not that Ferndale is being rejected. I mean, when we have those contacts with people, I think we usually win, except for when we're talking about giving out subsidies. And we have a lot of good things going for us once they get in the door. It's that they don't even think about coming into our door, especially locally. They think the only way to succeed in this area is Bellingham. Or if you're talking regionally, the only way to succeed is Everett or Seattle or Tacoma. People don't think about Ferndale. So I'm going to hand it over to Riley from this point forward.
Well done.
So, Riley's communications officer. At this point, you're thinking, that's great, Yori. What are we going to do about it? Good economic development requires quantifiable data, consistent effort, and diverse input, right? You got to know what you're doing. You got to keep doing it. You got to check to make sure that what you're doing works. So, here's the plan. Phase one. We would start rolling right away, right? Provided we see all those good head nods out there in the council. So, our goal to start would be beginning to collect those success stories. So we'd sit down with the businesses, the established businesses in Ferndale, and ask them, why did you choose Ferndale? What made Ferndale a success for you? And we'd get those in video, in picture, in writing. We'd get buy-in from the local business community. We'd host an economic development summit, bring people together, get them talking, so that we're not just coming up with the ideas out of our head. We're building from the experts we have already in the area. We'd identify 15 companies within the Ferndale market area to start working on saying, yes, will you use the Ferndale Made branding? And finally, we start working on some of those hard copy outreach materials. Phase two. So now we're talking about the second half of next year. This is where, again, we gather more data. Online survey for residents about what businesses they would like to attract. This is where some of the city staff is getting out of our offices and talking to the greater business community via conferences, trade shows. We start identifying four potential pilot projects for incentive programs. So maybe We have businesses that are interested in developing a part of our town that we really haven't focused on as much. Based on the feedback we've gotten from our business community, we'd start to develop a few options for you guys to consider. Engage with our business stakeholders located outside the city. And again, that wayfinding signage system, we tie that in with the branding about Ferndale Made. Phase three. You're welcome, Greg.
Who's that surprise man?
That's right. So looking at 2018, so this is when we start hitting you up for money. So we'd submit decision cards based on the 2018 budget. We'd start developing an economic development advisory board, further develop the relationships, implement the pilot project we talked about in phase two, continue working on the wayfinding system, and assess the efforts so far. So basically, this boils down to gather information, begin branding, begin building the infrastructure to start really recruiting businesses. Team. So, talked a little bit. Obviously, Yori and I are going to be working on this with some help from Stephanie. We're going to be bringing in, we've already tapped some of the city council's expertise on this. We'll continue to involve them in the process, along with our Ferndale Chamber of Commerce and other local business leaders. We're also going to use the expertise of our local experts. So we have the Western Center of Economic Business and Research. We had a great meeting with James McCafferty, who's just a wealth of information on economic development, and, of course, John Michener from the Port. So what do we need from you? We want kind of those head nods to say, yes, you're not running off doing something that's not worth your time. We definitely want your ideas and vision as this moves forward, what you see as the best way to promote Ferndale Made and to tell Ferndale's story. And, of course, you all have great connections within this community, and we would love to use those to help leverage Ferndale Made and make it the best success we can. So,
well done, Mr. Sweeney. Mr. Burnett, City Council may have some questions. Before you jump in, I thought of two made businesses in Ferndale, and I suspect you'll think of some cupcakes or whatever things are being made in Ferndale. Let staff know so we can track those buildings. There are quite a few hidden businesses here and there. So, Councilmember Goodrich.
I'm snickering in a way because several years ago we had an Economic Development Commission, which I was the chairman of, and we did a lot of this stuff. We went out and interviewed businesses, surveyed people, we did online things, and in a way it's kind of like I hear you're reinventing the wheel that was done several years ago. That I mean, we even talked about branding and coming up with ideas of branding and things. And my only thing is, I hope this goes forward. I support it. It's something that, like I said, we knew about years ago when we had the Economic Development Commission. We partnered with these same folks that you're talking about partnering with again. I just hope that the rest of the council supports it because at that time we did not have council support. Well, and we were not able to go forward. And But I think it's a good idea. I'm like looking forward to seeing it. And I don't know if you have the information that was generated years ago. And, you know, how much, why of that's still viable because those companies are still here.
If not, we'll pick your head about last round through. You know, time's a flat circle, so we'll come around.
Thank you, Councilmember. Councilmember Watson.
So I was wondering, we've been talking about doing the fiber optics and the high-speed internet to try and make bring more businesses downtown. Is that something that could still be part of this as kind of as an incentive to bring your business here?
It is part of our comprehensive plan, which is always nice to mention when people are talking about it. But I don't see why it wouldn't be a point to mention.
I'm just wondering how we could what we can do to move that forward.
Well, part of it, we are talking with Wave Communications on updating their franchise agreement. And a lot of it is getting the word out there, where we've already talked to them, and we said, gosh, you know, it'd be sure great if we could get fiber to different parts of our city. And so they sent us a map, and we have fiber in nearly all of our business areas, high-speed fiber.
Okay.
I didn't know about that. A lot of other people don't know about that. Mm-hmm. There are certainly some pros and cons over the city taking over as far as our maintenance costs and all of that.
But I don't want to take it over. I just want to find some way to, but if we have it, then we just need to have a map that we could put out there for people.
Absolutely. And I think that that's okay. where the franchise agreement can come into play, as well as in, as is typical with most franchise agreements, is they might not give you the specific, here's exactly where it is, just for mm-hmm. security reasons, but they can give a general as-built, you know, concept to say this area is served. And they were also more than willing to talk to us about where we think the next area that needs to be served is. So I think mm-hmm. Susan and I had a very good conversation with that gentleman from Wave, and we'll see how much of it is him selling and how much of it is, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
More questions to staff on this idea? Cool. Thank you very much, guys. I think you saw some nods. I think, is that what you're looking for?
Oh, yeah.
We were just looking for nods. If there were any head shakes, we disregarded those.
Very good. Going on to the next agenda on your packet there. I think the next three go together, all related to property tax, resolution, item G, H, and I'm going to hand this all over to our new finance director and kind of wade us through this here. A lot in front of you. And this will be a public hearing toward the end, so I know if audience members do wish to speak on it, we promise to give you a chance to do that.
Okay, we've got two resolutions today. And the first one is to increase the property tax levy by the implicit price deflator. City with a population of over 10,000, the allowable amount is 1% to increase the property tax levy. This year, or the IPD, and this year the IPD is less than 1%. So the first resolution is stating the IPD is 0.953. Unless we can take the 1% if we have a substantial need, and that is what the second resolution is. It's asking for 1% because of substantial need regarding our increase in wages and also our medical insurance. There's an average of 3% increase in those. So that is the second resolution. And I want to go on to the ordinance. The very first ordinance that we have tonight is asking for the 1% increase, and because of the substantial need. We do have a second option, and the second option is to take our bank capacity that we have discussed, which is around $56,000, and that would increase another 5.48%. And so that is option two. It is only one of these that you would be approving. It's not both of them. And it could be somewhere in between, too, if you want to take the 1%, or you take up to the 6.48%.
I know that council has some questions. I'll just ask one that might be in the room. If council votes to take the 1% allowed, number one, what does that bring to the city approximately, and what kind of impact does that have on a typical homeowner of a $250,000 home?
So the 1% would increase the property tax levy by $10,398 from last year's property levy. Mm-hmm. And that is approximately
$2.18
for a household that assessed value is around $250,000.
Thank you. City Council, questions on the resolutions? Councilmember Watson.
I just had a question. I'm trying to figure out what Agenda Bill G is versus H. I mean, so you would need us to vote on H, right? Because that's the one that says if we go over the one because of inflation. But what is G? Is G just for information?
G is the IPD. So when the IPD is less than 1%, we need to bring you two resolutions. Normally it would be one. Last year the IPD was less than 1%, so the same thing happened. You had two resolutions.
Okay.
So the first one says the IPD is 0.953%, and the second resolution states that we have a substantial need to increase it to 1% instead of the IPD of 0.95%.
Would it be fair to say the first resolution says we're going to take what we're allowed, which is less than 1%? The second resolution said there's need and we may bump it up to a full. Yeah. Fair enough?
Okay. That makes more sense. Thank you.
More questions of staff? So should we go to the ordinance and then open the public hearing? What would you suggest?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, so the ordinance, like...
Because it's a public hearing with the ordinance, so...
Right. So the first ordinance is just asking for the 1%. And the second ordinance, it's not both of them. The second ordinance is saying that we have a bank capacity of 56,000, and if you're willing to take that, that's an extra 5.48%.
So we're going to, in a moment, open the public hearing. So if you want to have public comment on this, council is deciding whether to take no property tax increase. They could do that. The law basically allows 1%, and our finance director explained what that kind of impact would have on you. But because there have been a number of years when the council did not take that 1%, we have what we call banked capacity, which is about 6% roughly, that they could go anywhere between 0 and 6% in essence. So at this point, we're going to hear the instructions for the public hearing, then we will open the public hearing. Our city clerk will read those instructions.
A public hearing is a formal opportunity to give testimony to the council for consideration in their decision-making process. Written comments may also be submitted to the city clerk prior to the beginning of the hearing. When the mayor calls your name, proceed as follows. Audience members who signed up prior to the beginning of our meeting will be called first to speak at this public hearing. If you were unable to sign up before the meeting, you will be given an opportunity to address the council once we've gotten through all the speakers listed on the hearing sheet. Each speaker should state his or her name and address for the record and will be given 3 minutes to address the council. When a large group of individuals supports the same position on an issue, we encourage the selection of one or two representatives to speak on behalf of the entire group.
And at 7:13, we will open the public hearing, and we will begin with folks who have signed up to speak. So you'll come forward, your name, where you live, and you'll have 3 minutes. We're going to start with James Wassison. Welcome, James.
My name is James Wassison. I live at 6153 Maureen Drive here in Ferndale. And I had a couple questions. The auditor's office has set out some revaluation of the property. And how? My questions are, how does that affect the amount of money that would be coming into the city and the requirements that, that meet the requirements of the community? And... the growth of the city has also increased the number of people in the city that, and the revenue from there. How does that impact the budgets that we have here over time?
Those are two really good but separate questions. City Administrator Young, want to take the first one?
The answers are extremely related insofar as each year, when we want to take a 1% property tax increase, for example, that does not mean that we're asking you to pay 1% more in property tax. We levy a dollar amount. So if in year one we levied $1 million citywide and we wanted to get a 1% increase in the second year, we would levy $1,010,000. So the be it 1% or 6%, it's dollars, not what it's charged you. So if all things stayed the same, if we levied $1 million this year and $1 million next year, and your home went up in valuation, your levy rate would go down because we're asking for the same dollars from a higher valuation of property. It's the same way if we add to the city, if we all of a sudden have 100 new homes, their valuation goes on the tax rolls, and since the city's tax valuation went up, the effect of getting one more dollar is less as the tax base grows. It's always confusing sometimes when people hear that they're increasing property taxes by 1% or 3% or whatever percentage might be. It's dollars. So if your valuation goes up and we ask for the same dollars, you're going to pay less because other people are paying in the second year that aren't paying in the first year. Hopefully that makes sense.
It does very much. Okay, Thank you very much.
And Mr. Watson, as you already know this, if my assessment came today too, and yours is probably like mine went up, yours went up. If everybody that goes up the same proportion, it doesn't change what you're paying taxes. It's just if yours goes up and mine goes down, then you're going to pay more. Thank you for coming up. Anyone else today? Public hearing on property tax increase. Okay, seeing none, we will close the public hearing at exactly 7:16 and change. I guess that's not exactly, but you get the idea. Council, what is your pleasure? Councilmember Goodrich.
I personally cannot support the 6% with, you know, cost of living and other things that people are doing. I think the city needs to live within the same general guidelines as other people. I mean, like, minimum wage is going up less than 1% next year. They're only getting 6 cents increase in minimum wage per hour, at least according to the websites I looked at today, which is less than 1% increase. So I can support the 1%, but I can't support anything more than that.
Thank you, Councilmember.
Stay within our means, even though we can go more than that.
Fair enough. Councilmember Watson.
And I'm also just going to support the 1%. The EMS levy, I'm looking here at the auditor's website, and it looks like the EMS levy has indeed passed, and that's going to be a large bill for a lot of people in Ferndale, and I don't think we can add on to that, so I think we should just take our 1% and move on and see what happens next year. I don't want to double dip with people. The EMS levy is going to be a big enough hit for most people.
So am I sensing a consensus in City Council? So there are two resolutions that need to pass first. Can I commend to you to pass those in order, and that will get you then finally to an ordinance that you can vote upon. Does that sound right to you?
I do have a logistics question, though. So do we need to pass them in order? Do you want the two resolutions saying that we need to at least take our 1% first, and then we'll follow up with the...
Exactly.
Okay. Well, then I would make a motion to pass the two resolutions.
Time to think.
Clerk?
Okay. My apologies.
Is that okay? That's okay. Is that all right, Susan, with
yes.
It? Okay. And I'm going to call it Agenda Bill G and H. Would that help you? Is that sufficient?
Okay. And Council understands what that is? There's a motion waiting for a second. It's been moved and seconded to pass Agenda Item G and H, resolutions related to the allowable property tax increase, and then the declaration of need, moved by Councilmember Watson, seconded by Councilmember Goodrich. Discussion from City Council. Seeing none, those in favor of passing the two resolutions signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Passed 7-0. Moving on to the actual property tax ordinance, I'm waiting for a motion. Councilmember Goodrich.
I'll make a motion that we do. And seeing it's hard to jump back and forth on this with the way the packet came out this time, whatever the 1% tax ordinance is, I make a motion.
I think it's pretty clear to staff.
I'll second.
It's been moved by Councilmember Goodrich, seconded by Councilmember Bursch to take the 1% allowable increase in the property tax. Discussion from council. Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay. The ordinance for the 1% increase has passed 7-0. Going on to item K in your agenda. Discussion, Transpo Downtown. Oh, excuse me. Budget ordinance. My apologies. I'm so anxious to get past
it.
Okay, I'm going to pass this off to, is it Greg or our finance director? Budget ordinance.
Finance director.
Nope. Don't fight.
We have the preliminary budget document in the packet. We've been working through this. State law requires that we conduct this business on a calendar certain date, and so this is the date when all cities in Washington State are required to pass their preliminary budget, and it's just that. It's a preliminary budget. As I think all of you are aware, probably more so than anyone, we continue to work through the budget, and if we are able to work through the budget in a timely manner, we will pass a final budget in December, which then, as 2017 rolls around, we will amend as necessary. But this fulfills our statutory obligation to have a preliminary budget on hand and available for anyone in the public who so desires. In fact, I even just passed one out tonight, so it's
so
obvious.
So this is a public...
To give public opportunity to...
This is a public hearing. Right. Council, do you have any questions of a technical nature first before we open the public hearing? Councilmember Watson.
Are the how many of the decision cards are in this at this point? Because we did some decision cards last Wednesday after committee. Are there any?
Yeah.
There are a couple of them in there. Okay. The wellness committee is in there in the kitchen for our pavilion.
Any of the big purchases for public works?
I don't believe so.
No. Okay.
No.
Thank you.
Yeah, and we'll put this up on the website so anyone who's interested can download. And in fact, we'll also make available if anyone needs a hard copy that doesn't have internet access. They can come by City Hall and we can print one out for them.
Councilmember Birch.
Do we have to pass it tonight? We have to pass it.
No,
we don't
no,
have a
no,
choice.
This is a public hearing. There's no action tonight. It's the next meeting that we
have. Ah, that's right. Yeah, there's two hearings. Yeah. That's right.
So the hearings are required.
Yes.
So not the passage. So we could open up the hearing, and then would we actually close the hearing or leave it open? How does that technically work?
Close the hearing because we have a second public hearing next month, so we'll post it to the website and have it available.
So, Council, are you ready to open the public hearing on the preliminary budget? Mm-hmm. We've already heard instructions on how to conduct a public hearing, and so at 7:22 and a little bit of change, we are opening a public hearing on the preliminary budget. Are there any members of the audience that would like to speak? Seeing none, we will close the public hearing at 7:22 and a little bit or more change. But I do want to let the public know where they can find it. The council has been working very hard on this for a number of weeks. A lot of effort. It is published online. And, Mr. Sweeney, could you help navigate in an easy way the public how they can look at the budget using the website?
Yeah, it's just in the agenda, though.
Okay.
If you go to the homepage, down at the bottom, there's the list of all the latest news. Just click on the agenda for tonight's meeting, and you should see it in there.
Very good.
Can you create something special for the budget
right up
on top?
And all the past budgets are there. There's a hot link, a tab at the top. It says budgets, and you can work your way there. It takes a little while to figure it out, but it's accessible to you. So thank you for your interest in that.
It's riveting reading, too.
It is, indeed. Going on to item, I think this is K now, discussion of Transpo Downtown Traffic Light Update. I'm going to imagine that's going to be our public works director. Yeah.
Thank you.
Look at that smile.
Kevin Grins, Public Works
Traffic
Director. And I was just going to give Council just a quick update on the downtown traffic light study. As I think we've discussed in the past, the Washington Street project put kind of a little bit of a snarl on our traffic for a while. The next step in the Transpo study for the downtown traffic light upgrades is to do traffic counts and then base a new timing methodology on that, as well as some upgrades to the physical hardware that's within the system. With the Washington Street project that was going on, we couldn't do those traffic counts because they would have been skewed due to the kind of odd, you know, traffic that we were having during that project, and then also getting school back into session. I'm hopeful that the traffic counts will be completed by the end of the month, and we'll be able to get a design and going forward with the project with it queued up for the beginning of the year in 2017. So as soon as we can get some information back on that, I can bring forward. The next step would be to, once we have the traffic counts and get the preliminary information back, I will bring Transpo back to give a presentation to the council so that you can hear what is anticipated and hopefully be able to have some type of an idea of what kind of benefit is potential for that.
Thank you, Mr. Rensk. Questions from City Council. Councilmember Olson.
School's going to be out 2 weeks for Christmas vacation, so is that going to skewer your...
The traffic counts will be conducted while school is in place.
Okay. So they will be within the next 3 weeks, so to speak.
Yeah. I didn't get a firm date from Transpo because they were working in conjunction with the people that were doing the the counts. It's a third party that does the actual physical going out. They put cameras up on the poles, and they use that to do video, and then they make all the traffic counts from that. There's a big rush of people that are trying to do that. They were trying to work it into the schedule, so I didn't have an actual firm date that they were going to be doing it, but the intent was to get it done by the end of November.
And also, are we factoring in WashDOT's two intersections at the on and off ramps, north and southbound there? That greatly impacts traffic backing up because they time them so long and have such an empty period of nothing, which directly affects us.
I have had conversations with Transpo about what we can do to better integrate that WashDOT controlled. As you may or may not be aware, the interchange is controlled by WashDOT, while ours are, you know, on a separate timed system. We kind of have an interesting mix of timers within our system. The ones that are on the east side of the river from LaBounty to the river are on a time-based system and don't communicate with each other. The ones that are on the west side of the river do communicate with each other and are in contact. So one of the pieces of the upgrade that would be going into it is linking that so that there's better communication. When we have better communication with the signals that are on that eastern side of the river, then we could then try to get some tie-in with WashDOT, whether that's, you know, approaching WashDOT, trying to get Bellingham to maintain those signals, or whether WashDOT would have integration with Bellingham and the timing of our signals. I don't know how that's going to work out, but I have had conversations with Transpo related to that and trying to get a better coordination of that whole core.
Okay, thank you.
Councilmember Goodrich.
Oh, when they're doing the counts, they're doing it the whole day.
Yeah.
You know, not just the PM peak like we've done in the past.
The current counts that we have and the counts that have been done in the past were related to the PM peak hour, and our timing plans are predicated on that PM peak hour and don't really have differentiation for the different
peak
times.
So we'll be able
times.
To see, you know, when our traffic kind of ebbs and flows throughout the day, because, you know, sometimes it's the morning and then sometimes around lunchtime it can get bad. And,
yeah. The intent of the new timing plans is to have a separate timing plan, if appropriate, for the AM and PM period so that we can get that tailored to the specific traffic demands that are on that system at the time.
It's going to be interesting to see, especially at lunchtime. I'm curious to see how it picks up around that time.
Mm-hmm. I'm very curious. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Moving on to 2080 Washington Street House. I guess this is version 2.0 because we've looked at this before, so... Is that you, Mr. City Administrator?
Yes.
Beautiful.
As you're aware, there's a house near the corner of Terry and Washington. We purchased the house literally on the corner of Terry and Washington, and actually Vista in Washington, and tore it down here a few years ago in kind of a first phase of clearing room for a roundabout construction there due to the skewed intersection of Washington and Vista there. The second house, the house next door, is now for sale. Previously, if you remember, we had an appraisal done. Following that appraisal, the council was interested in finding out, getting a home inspection and also a preliminary hazardous waste analysis. Those have been completed. As far as the hazardous waste asbestos side of the house, I was actually at the house when the guy was there doing the inspection, and the only asbestos he was able to identify is actually in the ceiling tiles. And he said that if the ceiling tiles remain in place, there's no problem with it. When we go to demolish the home, if we do in the future, those tiles would need to come out first. But otherwise, he was not aware of any other asbestos that would cause issues, and the ceiling tiles were in good shape. He said, if anything, they could be painted, which encapsulates the friable material even more so. No other hazardous materials were identified. In your packet was the inspection. The biggest issue is the roof. It is past its useful life. It is in need of replacement, and many of the other issues identified in the home inspection were a result of the leaking roof. I spoke with the gentleman who did the appraisal, and he, as a good appraiser would be, he was aware and he did make note of the roof, and he said that the condition of the roof and the need of its replacement was factored into his estimation of market value. I also took the home inspection report and gave a copy to, is it
Interfaith?
Interfaith, yes, who's interested in leasing the property long-term, potentially for transitional housing. They are in receipt of it. They continue to be very interested in leasing the house, and my conversation this afternoon was that if the council moves forward with the purchase of the house, they are interested in sitting down and negotiating some sort of interlocal agreement to try to figure out what repairs the city would be responsible for, what repairs due to potential long-term commitment by the city for transitional housing Interfaith might actually do for it. And my understanding is that they have done this in other locations. It's been successful. And they sounded rather excited about the prospect of building their housing stock for these folks that are trying to get back on their feet.
Very good. Councilmember Burst and Goodrich.
With all these repairs, what figure are we looking at above the purchase price of the home?
Yeah, the house was offered for, I think, $217,500. That was the requested price when it went on the market. Our market analysis, given the current condition of the house, was $215,000. And so that's the price that we would be offering them.
But the repairs that we would be responsible for after the purchase price?
Those would be either our responsibility or Interfaith responsibility. Or if we could not come to an agreement, we would probably take the step we did with the house next door and demolish it and clear the lot for the future roundabout.
Councilman Goodrich.
Yeah, that, reading through the report and being a prior facility maintenance guy, it seemed like there's a lot of repairs that would need to be done to that house. And I was just saying, kind of share the same concerns of who's going to pay for them. And, you know, if we buy it, he said, yeah, we're going to look at the agreement with them, but we have no idea how much the city would be responsible for, how much they're going to be responsible for, you know, roof, and, you know, can get mm-hmm. expensive. You know, so I was concerned about all the expenses associated with bringing that up to a standard, you know, and the, you know, the cost associated with that above and beyond.
Yeah, I mean, that would be something we would need to negotiate. And to the extent that you weren't comfortable with either the extent of the repairs or the relationship between us and Interfaith, we could, and someday we will, tear that down. That was the sole purpose for us buying the house in the corner. And we knew when we bought the house in the corner and removed it that we would need this house and possibly even one more. So whether we keep it in some sort of transitional housing now may depend on the cost of repairs, but irregardless of the cost of repairs, I believe the intention was to tear down the house. Otherwise, we probably should not have purchased the house on the corner and kind of done the first phase of this future development.
It's not primarily a purchase of a home, but a piece of
property. Exactly.
Councilor Wilson?
I share the same two concerns, but I came back to what you said. We want the thing for the property. We don't want it for the house. But your asbestos inspector, did he have any idea what it would cost to remove those tiles? It was quite significant when we did the other corner house for asbestos abatement.
Yeah,
I'd like to know.
He said it would be minimal only because we talked about the house on the corner, and he remembered that the literally the siding of the house was asbestos siding. And so that was a huge endeavor to literally remove all the asbestos. There was also some interior insulation that was asbestos. He didn't see any of those other things with this house. All he identified were the ceiling tiles, and he said they're accessible, they're easy to get to, they would not be the cost that removing the skin, the entire siding of the house represented for the other property.
More questions?
Everybody's idea of minimal is probably, mine's $5.
Mm-hmm.
What is?
I think it's more than $5.
Okay.
I'm just thinking, just because I look back on what we had paid, I'm thinking it's probably be in the $5,000 or $10,000 range.
See, that's substantial to me.
That's not minimal. That sounds like a lot of money.
I would just throw out that irregardless of the amount of asbestos in there, if we do proceed forward with the roundabout, the house has to be demolished or removed from the lot.
Okay.
And yep. It's a, you know, in the context of the roundabout discussion, it is a small cost.
Well, I guess that's what he's saying is medicine I don't like, but I can understand it's not going to cost us any cheaper if we do it down the road and somebody else buys it. So mm-hmm. I guess for that reason I would support it. But like Brent said, and they mentioned, these repairs, I read that thing front to back, it's substantial. Mm-hmm. Now, unless they can get somebody volunteer work to do it, I don't really see us, I don't know how many people want to shell out that kind of money mm-hmm. to get it up to code.
Understandable. Councilmember Birch,
and then let's go with that. No, I was trying to keep it over there, and then we'll go to Council Member Czar, who hasn't spoken yet. No, I know it was.
I have to go back to my gut feeling is if we purchase the house, we demolish it. We're not going to put that on Interfaith on a hope that they cover it. It's mm-hmm. going to be expensive, and I don't think they're going to jump on board with a house with that extensive repair work.
I really don't know. It'll be obviously a business decision for them, but if they would or they could find their way to save it, then that'd be great.
Vote on that on a hope and a prayer
that they
will.
We will someday tear the house down. That may be sooner
rather than
later.
Putting it on somebody else's back.
It could very well be that case.
Or someone may walk off with the house. That's a possibility.
Yeah, we could actually sell the house and have it moved. We tried to do that with a house in the corner, but it didn't work out because of the condition of the house. It also had a full basement, a full concrete basement, which made it excessively hard to move because there was a chimney that went from the basement through the roof.
Councilmember Czar?
Well, I read home inspections occasionally, and they are typically done to find every single thing that could be wrong. And so most people do not repair the majority of things on a list like this. But I would say the roof is the big thing for me, and I would hate mm-hmm. to... I am definitely for the purchase, but I hate to put it to Interfaith, like, yeah, we're going to do this, because I don't know that I want to put a roof on it.
Right, no, I've made no commitments to them for that.
What kind of direction?
I was just going to say that in consulting with the person I know who's an expert on rental property, you know, not all those repairs would need to be made for that to be a rentable house. You know, and knowing that you know that house has you know 5 to 10 years to live, you know, a lot of those, like Councilperson Czar said, you know, this is the worst case scenario. But the reality is, in order for it to be a safe rental property, only a fraction of those repairs would need to be done. That being said, one of those could potentially be the roof.
Mm-hmm. Probably.
But at the same time, we're not looking at having to go through this entire punch list. We're looking at you know just a handful of these, which would certainly you know, diminish the cost of bringing that up to you know, rentable quality.
This rental expert didn't have to own this at one time. I know he owned
it. He did, in fact.
Yeah, I thought so. So he knows that.
And he rented it.
Very good. Councilmember Watson.
I guess my question was, I think you were getting ready to ask the same question. So the last time we voted, we said buy it based on the inspection report. So do you need us now to officially vote to buy it? Or did we already?
Yes. Actually, that would be helpful. Both the realtor and the owners contact me rather regularly and wondering, you know. So I think if tonight we took a vote to begin the process of purchasing the house, we will have our city attorney her office start putting together all the paperwork, and then eventually we will bring that to you for authorization for the city to ink the deal, so to speak.
So a motion to that effect would be helpful to you.
Yes.
Council.
So I would make that motion that we begin the process to buy the house on Washington Avenue.
Second.
Moved by Councilmember Watson, seconded by Councilmember Hansen to purchase the home, move in that direction. Councilmember Goodrich. Question.
My only concern is any future costs associated with the city as far as, with, I don't know if it could be made into the motion or whatever. If you know, to me, if Interfaith wants to take it and take on all the expenses of bringing it up and using it, then I think it's great. Otherwise, I would say tear it down. But I don't know how we incorporate, if that needs to be incorporated in the motion.
Can I suggest that the purchase of the house is one thing. If we want, if staff wants to spend money to fix it, they have to come back to you anyway. So I think you have that second bite at the apple. Is that okay?
Okay. Yeah, that's why I just wanted to make sure that we weren't committing to...
No, this is just purchase.
Okay.
Any more questions? Seeing none, all in favor of the purchase of the home, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The purchase will be completed. 7-0. We are at the end here. Mayor reports. I just had two. One is just the annual announcement of the Santa showing up to Ferndale on Friday, December 9th. And the lights, the trees are lit up, and the whole thing happens as Santa shows up.
December
2nd, thank you. If I show up on the 9th, I'm going to make trouble. December 2nd. I'm going to get that down here. Very good. That's why I have people who work around here. And then Ronnie Sweeney and I are really proud to represent the entire city of Ferndale, you and staff and the community, to receive this award. It's the Whatcom Dispute Resolution Center presenting the Whatcom County Peace Builder Collaboration Award to the Star Park Playground Project, City of Ferndale 2016, for engaging the community in collaborative project and creating a common place for connection. It was a terrific evening. I think the highlight for me was somehow, Ronnie, you got two steaks. I was trying to figure that out. And I thought, that's a good sign. This guy's going to write grants for us, apply for grants. If he can manage to scam two steaks out of dinner, I think he's the right guy.
First
so
he sit next to me didn't show up. They served him a dinner.
That's what it was. So that was a pretty neat deal. Right? You have anything to say about that? It's a very fun evening.
It was a unique opportunity, and I think the most surprising part for me is usually when these sort of awards go out, it's the city staff that submits you for the awards. This was not something that we threw our hat in. This was from the community recognizing the work we've done.
It was neat.
Very neat.
That's all the mayor has. December 2nd. December 2nd. Council reports. Council member Hirsch.
After the tree lighting ceremony.
On the 2nd.
On the December 2nd. The old-fashioned Christmas starts at 5 o'clock in Old Pioneer Park.
Mm.
And it runs through Sunday afternoon. So.
Very good. Councilor Olson.
And there is a fee to go to old-fashioned Christmas. Unlike special Sundays, we get some people came and were not expecting that.
There's a lot of fun stuff to do in buildings. So.
Okay. Y'all got an email from the mayor that said, there's a copy of it in there, that council members Watson and Olson have raised some questions about the hiring process for the new police chief, on and on. Y'all got it, so you read it. I wanted to clear this up. The mail you were sent from the mayor incorrectly stated I had questions about the police chief's hiring process. I don't have any questions. You see now an attached copy of what I sent. I merely volunteered my services for that and brought up the point that I didn't see anyone on the police guild and as part of their contract. And that's all I had to say about it. My email didn't ask anything about the hiring process. With 30 years of police experience, I volunteered months ago, May 2016, to Greg Young to serve on the selection panels. As a member of Border Patrol Management for the last 14 years, I've served on internal management selections, merely offered my experience. Seeing no police representatives on the email list, I merely reminded the mayor of our police guild contract that allows them to serve on selection panels. That's all I had offered, as you can see by the attached email, which wasn't forwarded to you for whatever reason. Instead, the mayor emailed all the council members without forwarding the emails he had received from me. I'll leave it to your own conclusions why he did that. The mayor is correct in saying he has the sole authority to hire under our form of government. He can form a panel with himself and SpongeBob, if he so chooses, and hire anyone he wants. However, the council has the sole authority whether to authorize that person a contract. The mayor can hire someone without a contract. The council can strip the funding to pay for that person. These are the rules. I'm not advocating doing that. We don't even know who it's going to be. But the new members need to know how it works.
What also concerns me in his email was, it's his decision to include the Latinx population, which I assume is a misspelling of Latino. But we have a large Asian population, a large Ukrainian population. Once we start breaking down representatives to ethnic factors, we need to make sure that all are included to be truly represented. That's all I have to say.
Thank you, Council Member. Any other council reports? Seeing none, staff reports. Community Development Director, welcome back.
Thank you. Nothing.
Public Works.
Good.
Are soon to be vacationing in a warm, happy place.
Yeah.
Very good. Our City Clerk.
Nothing.
Communications Officer.
Nope.
Oh, you guys want to get out of here. And the last, almost the last, Mr. Young.
All set.
And I don't see the Chief.
Nope, Chief got called away.
Very good. Very good. I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
Just one more thing. I would like to wish everybody in the room a happy Thanksgiving weekend. You're blessed.
And you as well.
Thank you.
Much to be thankful for. Looking for that motion.
Motion to adjourn.
So moved.